You are listening to a sermon by Paul Thiessen, recorded on Sunday, February 6, 2011, at the Point Grey Intermennonite Fellowship in Vancouver, British Columbia. The opinions expressed by the speaker are not necessarily those of the church. This recording is licensed for personal use by individuals only and may not be copied, broadcast, or redistributed without the prior permission of the church board. For more information, please visit our website at www.pgimf.org.
Years ago, when I attended a church in Edmonton, there was a member of our congregation who was very reticent, and different people belonged to home study groups, and in his home Bible study group, everyone was going to take turns leading the Bible study, and members of this group apparently were very curious as to what Henry would say, because he was a man of very few words. And so it came his turn, and he opened the passage and read it and says, "I think this is such a powerful passage, it speaks for itself." And I thought that's what I'd have to do this morning, because last night at 9:30, as I was working on my laptop, I was just putting finishing touches on this, and Mr. Gates tapped me on the shoulder and asked if he could update some files on my computer, which I kind of let him do, whereupon my computer froze for 1 hour and 15 minutes, and I was in such despair that I picked up a pen and started writing some notes. And then it flashed back. So, the salt of the earth, I think, rather challenging passage. When I was in medical school at the University of Alberta, I was on an adult medical service at the Royal Alexandra Hospital, and we had a lot of patients with heart and kidney problems on our ward, and as you may be aware, excess salt can aggravate lots of things, including your blood pressure, and so we would often place patients on very restricted salt diets. And as trainees, we would, of course, be completely oblivious to what a very restricted salt diet would taste like. And so once every 2 weeks, the medical service we were on would give us free lunch in the cafeteria, and we would have to eat a meal based on these severe restrictions that we put our patients on, which is a real eye-opener, as we were truly amazed at how bland and unpalatable a severely salt-restricted diet was. And I'm sure you probably heard the humor about what's low fat and low salt and tastes delicious, and the answer is nothing. So let us look at some aspects of salt that may not normally be considered, both its absence or in excess, because either way, extremes can be deadly. Salt, or sodium chloride, is an essential ingredient in our bodies that must be exquisitely regulated to maintain balance of our fluids and electrolytes. All living things need to maintain that salt balance in their bodies and cells. On the dairy farm where I grew up in Southern Alberta, we would have blocks of salt, a block of salt in the pasture, because the cows had to maintain salt balance given their very vegetarian diet. And we knew that it was important for their health. Whenever we administer IV fluids to anyone of any age, starting with a tiny premature baby, we must always add some sodium chloride. Because if we don't, you will get in big trouble. Salt levels that are too high or too low are particularly challenging for your brain and nervous system and can lead to seizures and other very undesirable consequences. And as we are probably aware, larger amounts of salt can be very destructive of life, as can be seen in some of the salt lakes around the world, like the Aral Sea, where very little grows around the edges. In fact, in the farm where I grew up in Southern Alberta, the alkali patches in the pasture where salt would come out of the ground, there would be very little growing there, very stunted grass, and we knew that too much salt was, in fact, quite bad. Balance was very important. Well, let's look a bit at the application of salt as a metaphor in our modern world. One can't open a newspaper in our day or turn on the news without becoming aware of an ongoing battle between secularists and religious fundamentalists in every corner of this globe. The secularists would deny all religious faith and rid our world of what they see as the destructive side of religion, while the zealots in the opposite camp wish to impose a level and form of observance that can also be divisive and destructive. Sharia law, I guess, would be one manifestation of that. This zealotry can actually destroy faith, and that could attempt to grow. Just as with salt, this balance is really essential. At the time Jesus spoke these words in Matthew, salt was still been seen as something of certainly of great value. In the ancient world, it was considered so valuable it was used as money in some areas. In fact, our modern word for salary is derived from the Latin word for salt, which referred to an allowance of salt called the salarium that was paid to Roman soldiers. Its value can also be seen in that it's become symbolic as a preservative of covenants, as stated in Numbers 18, verse 19. Whatever is set aside from the holy offerings the Israelites present to the Lord, I give to you and your sons and daughters as your regular share. It is an everlasting covenant of salt before the Lord for both you and your offspring. And this reference of salt as a symbol of covenant appears a number of times in the Old Testament. Salt clearly had an intimate connection with the idea of covenant or binding relationship, as the salt was to be used in all offerings, even vegetable offerings. In Leviticus 2:13, add salt to all your offerings. Certainly, salt as a preservative is one of the major implications for what is meant in the salt metaphor. Salting and drying were once the only real means of preserving food. Salt water is an effective way of treating superficial or local infections through skin. This surely is one of the more powerful aspects of the salt metaphor. As Christians, being salt in the world, we're placed here to counter the forces of decay and help preserve wholeness and goodness in the world. The Oxford Dictionary of Idioms states that the salt of the earth metaphor is used to describe, quote, a person or persons of great kindness, reliability, goodness, and honesty. How do we define this goodness which we wish to preserve? I think the best definition probably lies in Galatians 5:22-23, in the description of the fruits of the Spirit: love, joy, peace, patience, kindness, goodness, faithfulness, gentleness, and self-control. Against such there is no law. And I think the words of this passage from Eugene Peterson's The Message are particularly poignant and well stated. What happens when we live God's way? He brings gifts into our lives, much the same way that fruit appears in an orchard. Things like affection for others, exuberance about life, serenity. We develop a willingness to stick with things, a sense of compassion in the heart, and a conviction that a basic holiness permeates things and people. We find ourselves involved in loyal commitments, not needing to force our way in life, able to marshal and direct our energies wisely. I meant, by the way, to begin by just reading the two verses from the Matthew 5 passage from The Message, because I really like this one phrase that it comes out in The Message, which is, let me tell you why you are here. You're here to be salt seasoning that brings out the God flavors of this earth. If you lose your saltness, how will people taste godliness? You lost your usefulness and will end up in the garbage. Look at those words of Peterson's translation about being a God flavor here. They're particularly powerful. The fruits of the Spirit are not the personality traits that are promoted in our rather very competitive and cutthroat, often cutthroat society. And reflecting the fruits of the Spirit in our daily lives, I think, lies at the heart of being the salt of the earth. That brings us to another characteristic of salt, and that's its invisibility. I've already mentioned that too little or too much salt renders food either bland or inedible. When a dish is salted just right, then we compliment the dish for the flavor of the ingredients, not for the taste of the salt. Salt enhances the ingredients. Salt brings out all that is best in the inherent flavor of ingredients to which it is added, but does not, and it does that by becoming invisible itself. The purpose of salt then brings us to the question of God's purpose for us in the world and our role in restoring and maintaining the goodness that he wishes to see. I think a greater understanding of what it means to be salt in the world can come from seeing living examples of how others have lived out this idea in their lives and shown themselves to be examples of being the salt of the earth. Last fall I read this book, Lest Innocent Blood Be Shed, by Philip Haley. Haley was a professor of philosophy at Wesleyan University in Connecticut. He died in 1994. And he was particularly interested in ethics and in the nature of institutional cruelty and how individuals respond to it. I stumbled upon this book by chance on the discount table at Regent College last fall, the bookstore, and I found it so moving that I actually purchased a total of 6 copies and gave it to various friends and family members. I have to say, I've never done that with any book in my life before. Philip Haley, the author of this book, was a professor. Well, I said he was a professor of philosophy. I think this story speaks with particular elegance to the challenging issue of what it means to be a pacifist, which is, I think, why the book spoke so strongly to me, because it's an issue that Mennonites and many have struggled with for centuries. This book tells the story of how the small Protestant town of Le Chambon, I'm full of some French immigrants, in France, met the terrible events of World War II and the plight of the Jews fleeing the Holocaust at a time when the Vichy government in France was collaborating with the Nazi regime. The name of this village appears in very few history books, mainly because the story only involves a relatively few people, passionate people, a pittance compared to the millions who were dying in the continent of Europe during World War II when the events of this story were unfolding. During the 4 years of German occupation of France, the village of Le Chambon, with a population of about 3,000 impoverished people, saved the lives of about 5,000 Jewish refugees, many of them children. The author Haley was researching the Holocaust and reviewing countless documents pertaining to the cruelty of the Nazi regime when he happened across a short article about this village. He was very moved by the story, and so he began to research it further, and he made it a significant thrust of his research, and that's what ended in this book being written. The events of this book occurred thanks to the brave determination of 2 Protestant ministers, André Trocmé and Edward Thaïs, who worked together with the quiet support of Magda Trocmé, which was Trocmé's wife, and other residents of their village. At great personal risk, they hid and sheltered refugees fleeing the Holocaust and helped guide many through the mountains of eastern France to the safety of the Swiss border. They also established a school for refugee children, and Trocmé made great efforts after the war to raise funds to keep this school going. As the war ended, Trocmé worked very actively to prevent massacres of German soldiers captured in this region. This happens after all wars, people seek revenge. And he worked very, very hard to prevent this from happening in his region, and was very successful. He found that both sides in the war were utterly convinced of their own innocence and the guilt of their adversaries, which justified killing those on the other side. And after the war, Trocmé lectured for the Fellowship of Reconciliation in both Europe and North America, an organization that he led, and which was dedicated to promoting nonviolent solutions to conflict. He strongly believed that decent people who remain inactive out of cowardice or indifference when around them human beings are being humiliated and destroyed are the most dangerous in the world. The Christians and other villagers believed passionately that they were there to help and shelter those in need, regardless of who they were. One point, when one of the Vichy officials is trying to force them to reveal the identity of who the Jews are in their community, one of the Trocmé says, "We do not know what a Jew is, we only know man." And in the process. How do we understand this desire to help strangers at great risk to oneself? Quote, It may appear that what happened in La Chambon during the war years was almost too complex to be understood. There were many factors that made the rescue efforts of the villagers succeed. And if we're interested in understanding what happened in a way similar to the way the villagers themselves looked at what they did, their actions become rather easy to comprehend. They become as easy as Magda Trockmay, Andrei Trockmay's wife, rushing to the front door of the presbytery, opening it, turning the doorknob, finding a pleading refugee on the front step and simply saying, "Naturally, come in." She did not spend a lengthy time pondering what the right thing was to do. She acted instinctively from an inner well of compassion and simply did the right thing. Goodness can be the simplest thing in the world, like opening a door and welcoming in a stranger. To me, this story is a very powerful example of pacifism at work in an active way and truly being the salt of the earth. And I, before this, never thinking this message, I just kept thinking that this truly was being the salt of the earth. The kindness of the citizens of La Chambon was in opposition to the cruelty and oppression that was such a dominant force in the land. They did not go seeking how they could do good. They simply responded with open hearts to the challenge that was thrust into their midst by vulnerable, terrified refugees seeking, fleeing persecution. And as I say, I think to me this story is a very powerful example of what it means to be the salt of the earth and to bring a life-altering flavor in a floundering society. Lest we think that only Christians can be the salt of the earth, I'm currently reading a book, which I can't hold aloft because it's on my Kindle, called I Shall Not Hate, which you may have heard of by an author named Izzeldin Abuleish. He is a Muslim Palestinian doctor, an obstetrician and gynecologist, a fertility expert, who was born and raised in the Jabalia refugee camp in the Gaza Strip. He is a Harvard-trained public health expert, who is also an associate professor in the School of Public Health at the University of Toronto. Getting his training was amazing. He got it in Israel and constantly had to cross the border. Astonishing story. He had 8 children until 3 of his daughters were killed by an Israeli shell that hit their home in Gaza in January of 2009. He was a widower as his wife had died of leukemia 2 years before. So here he is with 8 children living in Gaza. After losing his 3 daughters in the shelling, he stated clearly that he did not seek revenge and would not resort to hatred. He stated boldly and publicly, "I shall not hate." Instead, he made further pleas that those in conflict in the region would talk to each other and try to reach a peaceful settlement of their differences. He said, quotes, "If I knew that my daughters were the last sacrifice on the road to peace between Palestinians and Israelis, then I could accept it." He expresses no wholesale condemnation of the Israelis. In fact, he seems devoid of pessimism or hopelessness. He does not dwell on what is in the past, but rather on what can be done in the future. He is forward-looking and full of hope, which is not easy in this world, and particularly hard in his world. He is clearly lending a tone that is at odds with the violent society in which he lives. And in my view, he is truly being a living example of what it means to be salt of the earth. So I believe that being at the heart of being the salt of the earth is behaving in accordance with the beliefs we espouse and truly standing up for what we say we believe so that we make a difference. We are to love the Lord our God with all our heart and soul and mind and our neighbor as ourself. It seems to me that if we truly want to be the salt of the earth, we must be willing to love our enemies. Our lives need to lend a seasoning that shows that we do not only hold the idea of being salt in our world as a vague sentiment, but work out the practical implications in our daily lives. At the heart of it, I think, being the salt of the earth means making a difference. In the words of today's passage, the message, you are to be the salt seasoning that brings out the God flavors of this earth. Thank you.